You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Hello and welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 27th of November, 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting on Radio Aryan, which you can find at www.radioaryan.com. You'll find quite a variety of podcasts that we've got there, British and American at the moment. And this is the British podcast, SS Britannia, that I normally produce with Brutus of Troy, but he's got a bit of domestic instability at the moment, so he's unable to join me. Today, I've got a few items on my list to talk about. I'm not sure that I'm actually going to be able to get through all of them. And I think I'll start with some comments that were left at Morgoth's review last week. And I would like to say thank you for the encouraging comments on YouTube and elsewhere that we receive. I know that all the hosts at Radio Aryan, you know, it makes it worthwhile what we do when we see positive comments that encourage us. There were a couple of other comments asking a few questions and pointing out some rather common misconceptions, actually, about Christianity and also about the Middle East. And I thought I'd probably start with that this week. A lot of people, especially recently, well, by recently, I mean in the last 70 years, have become very anti-Christian and seem to be of the belief that Christianity is somehow foreign and it's foreign to white people. It's a Middle Eastern religion. And that's mainly because the Middle East is now filled with foreign people. It's filled with Arabs. It was originally white. I mean, we can go back 4,000 or 5,000 years, and you have the Egyptian Empire, the Assyrian Empire, the Babylonian Empire, and they were all white. And we always knew that they were white, and we just assumed that everybody else accepted that they were white up until about a century ago, I guess, when people started assuming that actually, they'd always been Arabs, and we also had this encouragement of Negroes to, we made up an entire history for them. It was believed that because the Negroes didn't actually have a history, perhaps that was why they weren't doing very, very well academically. So if we could invent a history for them and try and improve their history somewhat, that they might be interested in learning and studying. So they basically made up a load of rubbish about Negroes building the pyramids and having these superior civilizations. And it's acknowledged that it was all rubbish, but Negroes fell for it, and it gets promoted. It still gets promoted in schools today. Even rubbish about Negroes coming over to Britain, which is a pack of lies. I mean, we had the King of Africa came to Britain, which is written about in the Brute, the Chronicle of England. And that king was the king of the Vandals, but it's written down as the king of Africa. And this is because when our chronicles were being written, everyone we met was white. And Africa was full of white people. You had Carthage, North Africa, what's now Libya. That was white, Cyrene. It was a white civilization there, basically. It was the breadbasket of the Roman Empire, filled up with white Romans. And it was only when the Muslims invaded that it really destroyed the genetic integrity of the place and turned everyone into Arabs. I mean, this is what Muslims do. When they take over a country, they rape all the non-Muslims that they can get hold of. And the produce of those rapes is then an Arab, and they Arabize the country. This is what happened to Ethiopia. You had Ethiopia, which was a center of the Christian church years ago. And once you get to the 6th or the 7th century, the Muslims invaded And they just turned everyone there brown, basically. And you've still got lighter-skinned Arabs that are called the Copts that are in Egypt. And you still had a white aristocracy in Egypt and Ethiopia right up until the 6th century, basically. You can read Strabo, who was writing in 50 BC, and he talks about the Ethiopian civilization and the white people that were there. He says they're exactly the same as the Greeks, civilized. And there's also an uncivilizable savage who runs around naked and grubs around in the ground for roots and weaves his hair into shirts and is completely uncivilizable and not worth bothering with and just makes screeching noises. And that, of course, that's talking about the Negro, basically. But that's acknowledging that there was two different types of people inhabiting that territory. And when the Bible talks about the Ethiopian eunuch that accompanied St. Paul, or St. Paul spoke to, this Ethiopian eunuch was a white celibate. It wouldn't have been a eunuch because the Bible says that anyone who is wounded in the stones cannot come into the congregation of the Lord. So no eunuch would have been reading the scriptures, which this Ethiopian eunuch was. And also where it says that he was Ethiopian, it meant that he was white. He came from Cush. In fact, if you look at the Bible itself, the oldest tradition that we have, the Christian tradition, is that all the sons of Noah were white. And we are told that the church tells us that all of Europe came from Japhet. I don't necessarily go along with this because I follow Christian identity. I think we're descended from Shem. But it doesn't really matter whether we're descended from Shem or Japhet because they were both brothers. So when the church tells us that Japhet was white and Europeans come from Japhet, and what they're basically saying is Japhet's brother was Shem. So Shem was white as well. And of course, today's modern Jews like to lie and say, oh, we're descended from Shem. But how could they be descended from Shem if he was a brother to Japhet? Because they're not European. They don't look European. They have a completely different genome to us. They're mongrelized. So somewhere along the way, something happened to the people that call themselves the Jews to change them from being white into what they are now. And of course, that happened in about 200 BC when the remnant of the tribe of Judah that came back from Babylon that was living in Jerusalem, they went to war with the country next door, which was the country of Edomia. And rather than slaying all the Edomians when they had them at their mercy, they said, I'll tell you what, you can all get circumcised. And if you all follow our religion, we'll all be called Judeans together. And that's what happened. And this nation of Edomians, or Edomites, who were part Canaanite, basically took over Judea. And it was actually at that point, I've just been reading today, it was at that point that God stopped speaking to the Israelites. They, according to Flavius Josephus, the high priest used to have this breastplate with jewels on it, and these jewels used to emit a light, and that was how, and the Greeks called it the oracle. That was the Hebrews' oracle, basically. And it stopped working at that time, 200 years before Christ, exactly at the time that John Hyrcanus went and basically destroyed the genetic integrity of the nation. That was when God stopped speaking to them. But to bring it back to whether Christianity is a white man's religion. The Old Testament was white. All those people in those areas that we're talking about there, the Middle and the Near East, they started off white. Church tells us that Shem, Ham, Japhet were white. And then in chapter 11 of Genesis, it tells you all their descendants. And one of them started the Assyrian Empire. Another one started the Babylonian Empire. Another one started the Egyptian Empire. And gradually over time, they interbred with their black slaves. And this is what Adolf Hitler refers to in Mein Kampf, where he says about the Aryan builders of civilization, they build up a civilization, they need to build a city, they bring in manual labor from outside the city, they bring in the Negroes, they direct them as the manual labor. And eventually you get the bleeding heart liberals who say, we should allow them into the city, we should allow them to spend the night in the city as well. It's not good for them to be outside the city all the time. So eventually they get allowed inside the city, and eventually they get given equal rights with the citizens, and eventually the citizens start sleeping with them, and then that's it. You end up with the fall of the civilization. You end up with Babylon falling. You end up with the ancient Aryan civilization falling. Egypt falls. Assyria falls. Nineveh falls. All of them end up blending in with the Negroes, and then you end up with the people that are living there today, Arabs. And the word Arab itself is an ancient Hebrew word that means mongrel race. And you can look that up in Strong's Bible Concordance. Just look up the word Arab and it will tell you what it means. And it will tell you that it's derived from a word meaning to darken. When the sun goes down and it's dark and it's twilight, it gets darker and darker. And that's the origin of the word Arab. So when the Bible talks about Ishmael, who was basically a son of Abraham, and these Arabs today like to say, oh, we're Ishmaelites. We came from Ishmael. Well, Ishmael was a slaver. He sold lots of slaves, and he ended up interbreeding with the slaves to create the first lot of Arabs. And they were centered in the area which we call Arabia today. And it's called Arabia because it's named after the mongrels that were living there. And back at the Roman times, it wasn't a desert like it is today. It was beautiful, lush, verdant, and fertile. And the Romans called it Happy Arabia. In fact, a lot of the Middle East used to be very, very fertile. But once they destroyed their genome, mongrelized, the earth stopped producing its fruits for them. And it turned into desert. And it tells you that in the Bible as well. In fact, it says that the earth would vomit up their corpses if it could, these mongrels. So you end up, you have a white religion, basically. You have the story in the Old Testament of all these peoples that started out in the Fertile Crescent. And the Fertile Crescent is where civilization began. If we look for the first traces of civilization, it all began in this area that's called the Fertile Crescent because it's in a crescent shape and it's the most fertile part of the earth. And that's just common sense. Where would man most be likely to advance to a higher state of learning? Well, it would be somewhere where there was plenty of food and it was quite easy to till the land. And they basically set up suburbs and they set up roads interlinking the farms from the outside to bring the food in. And they were able to build their temples and learning and science and all these wonderful things. And that was the start of the white civilization. And the Hebrews were chosen as the priestly race, and they were acknowledged as the priestly race. The second temple was paid for by Cyrus, who was the king of Persia. He was the king of the Persian Empire, but it tells you in the Old Testament he was descended from, I believe it was Elam, which was the Persian Empire. So he was related to the Israelites that he had within his power, and that's why he paid for the Israelites to go back and rebuild their temple in Jerusalem. And it was only a tiny, tiny fraction of them that actually went back anyway. It was only about 1% of all the Israelite peoples that went back there to build this temple. But it tells us that it was only the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin that got taken to Babylon. And only 10% of the tribe of Judah actually went back. And if you think there were 12 tribes originally, Judah is just one tribe, and only 10% of them went back. That's 1% of the whole lot. But they went back there, and Cyrus paid for it because he was related to them. He was white as well, as we well know. I mean, most nationalists will acknowledge that the original Persians were white. I mean, this is why a place is still called Iran, which comes from the word Aryan. Aryan, although it's a later term that we use for white people, it was always associated with traits that white people have, being honorable and being noble. And Flavius Josephus tells us that the third temple, well, basically it was the second temple, but Herod, who was a part Canaanite, part Edomite Judean, that the Herod of the time of Jesus, he rebuilt the temple. But up until that point, the people that had paid for it were all the kings of the known world. It was all the white kings of the Roman Empire sent money to this temple for it to be built up and to keep the sacrifices going, because it was known from right from the start that the Hebrews were the priestly people. They were chosen by God to offer sacrifices for the sins of man, for the sins of white man. And that's why these kings sent them money every year. And that's what kept the temple going. Apparently it was gold plated, and it had all spikes on it to stop the birds crapping on it. And it must have been an amazing sight to behold. It really was one of the wonders of the ancient civilizations. And these Mongol Jews, these Canaanite Jew Edomites, basically revolted against the Romans. And that was really the first revolution that was in the style of the later Bolshevik revolution. They basically did the worst things they could possibly think of to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. They starved them. They dressed up as women. They did homosexual acts on them. They robbed them. They stole everything they could from them. Anyone that was in the aristocracy, they brought them down low. They treated them terribly. And they set fire to the place. And they were quite happy to see the temple just be destroyed, because they knew that it wasn't really their temple, because they were mongrels. They were these Arab types. They couldn't care less about the temple. But the Romans, they were in tears. They were in tears at what they were doing, being forced to destroy this marvel of the ancient world. They knew how important it was, and they felt remorse for doing this. But the Jews didn't. The Jews couldn't care less. They just wanted to see it all destroyed. They are the Antichrist, basically. And when you think of Christ as logos, order, truth, and they're anti all of that. They're against all of that. They are the force that is against all of that. They are like the force of chaos against us, who we represent the force of order, truth, civilization. And Christ himself is the logos. It's the pattern that civilization is built upon, the living truth. And we're agents of that, which is why we accepted Christianity. It was like the evolution of our spiritual path. We started off with having all our different gods, our pagan gods. If you listen to Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, he will explain to you that our concept of God, or our concept of these pagan gods, was completely different to how we imagine God to be today. And of course it was, because these people that were worshipping these pagan gods were also sending off money for the priestly nation, the Israelite nation, to sacrifice in Jerusalem to the Creator. And yet all the other white tribes had their own separate gods. So we end up with Christ dying, being resurrected, Christianity taking off, the Jews, or the Edomites, basically, these Canaanites, descended from the Pharisees, they were rejected by Christ, and they were rejected by the early Christians. And they persecuted the early Christians. This is why St. Paul, who was a Benjaminite, he talks about how the Jews are persecuting him, and the Jews are trying to kill him, and they're contrary to all men, all these various things he talks about. And Paul also talks about, he contrasts the sons of Esau or Edom with the sons of Israel. And what he's talking about there is Esau, Edom, married Canaanite wives, and his descendants were the Edomians, who had basically taken over Judea. So you had the descendants of Judah and Benjamin, the pure descendants who became Christian, and you had the mongrelized descendants of these Edomian Judeans, who were rejected by it, who knew that it wasn't for them. But they had to form something in opposition to Christianity. They had been used to sacrificing in this temple, because the Old Testament religion was all built around the temple and sacrificing animals and priests. And what happened was, when the temple was destroyed, they couldn't do any of that anymore. That was effectively over. Christ on the cross was the final sacrifice. The priest didn't need to sacrifice in a temple anymore, and the temple was destroyed. So what they did, they got together their oral teachings, which they'd been working on from Babylon onwards, basically. The remnant of the tribe of Judah that were in Babylon, they picked up on the magic and all the magic ways of doing things and Gnosticism. And they wrote all that down, and that became the Talmud. And that was probably about the 3rd or the 4th century AD. And the Talmud was written in opposition to Christianity, and it's completely anti-Christ and anti all the laws of the Old Testament. And a lot of these Jews as well, these Alexandrian Jews, the ones that were in Alexandria, they tried to subvert Christianity by basically making all these spurious gospels. And that became known as Gnostic Christianity, which was basically the Jews trying to infiltrate and take over Christianity, which they were unable to do. But what they were able to do, or what the Jews in the Roman Empire were able to do, was to bend the ear of Nero. I believe he had a Jewish mistress, and to convince him that these Christians were the bad lot, and he needed to get rid of them. So the Roman Empire made Christianity illegal. So you ended up having the apostles and the early Christians. A lot of them had to flee from where they were. And another place that was outside, or a place that was outside of Roman jurisdiction, was Britain. And of course, the Roman Empire also made Druidry illegal. So the obvious place for these early Christians to go was to go to Britain. And the Druids would welcome them, which they did. And you end up with the legends of Joseph of Arimathea, I think Aristobulus, and there are legends of various apostles coming to Britain. Even St. Paul supposedly came to Britain, and there was a manuscript, I think it might be called the Tolini manuscript. It was found in Turkey a couple of hundred years ago, that talks about St. Paul coming to Britain. And of course, this is why we have Church of St. Peter and St. Paul and St. Paul's Cathedral in London. And that's obviously based on an earlier church. So Joseph of Arimathea comes over to Britain and he's welcomed. The king is Arviragus or Caractacus at the time. He's welcomed. He's given a bit of land, and legend has it that land was Glastonbury, basically. And that's why Glastonbury was the most holiest place in the whole of Christendom. And you look at what's happened to Glastonbury now, it's just a pit of occult and witchcraft and paganism, basically. And that used to be the holiest place in the whole of Christendom. And there's legends that Jesus himself set foot on Glastonbury, and he brought his mother over with him when he came over with Joseph of Arimathea. Because Joseph of Arimathea he's recorded as being a nobilis decurio, which was basically a tin merchant in the Roman Empire. And he was very high up in the Judean Sanhedrin, and he also worked for the Romans. So he already knew the British people. He'd worked with the British people because Britain was a major exporter of tin. They found our tin in India, Egypt, all over the world. Apparently it was used in King Solomon's temple, the original one. Used stuff from Britain. And Britain used to send tithes to there. It says the Isles of the Sea used to send tithes to King Solomon. So this goes all the way back from when the white people first spread out from the Fertile Crescent. And we still had these connections. Also at the time, when you had Joseph of Arimathea in Britain, you had Caractacus, the famous British king that was sold out to the Romans. He was taken to Rome. And he lived in the Palatium Britannicum, and he was held a hostage there for 10 or 15 years. And this Palatium Britannicum became the first church, and that was the first church in Rome. So the first church in Rome was British, and St. Paul stayed there, I believe. I'm not sure if Peter did as well. St. Paul definitely stayed there. And this Caractacus' daughter married Pudens, who was a Roman senator. And he's written about in 2 Timothy. And there's also in the south of England, there's a stone that which shows that Rufus Pudens was in Britain. And he married this daughter that was called Claudia in honor of Claudius, because the Roman Emperor Claudius had adopted her as his daughter, as was the custom at the time. You see, Rome may have been warring against Britain and may have taken Caractacus as a hostage, but they knew that Caractacus was of the royal line, the same as the Romans originally had, because it all goes back to Brutus and Silvanus and all the kings of Europe, and the people that started the Roman Empire were interrelated, and this is why today we still have kings from other parts of Europe in Britain, like we've got Phil the Greek over here. And the king of England was related to the Tsar of Russia, And they could have swapped over. And we've had German kings over here in Britain. We've had Danish kings. It's because their bloodline goes all the way back. So even though the Romans may have been warring against the Britons, the king of Britain was related to the aristocracy of Rome. And also because the Romans had killed off their monarchy, it basically gave them a claim to the aristocracy if they could marry the daughter of a British king. So later on in British history, we have records of the Roman senators that were sent over, or the commanders that were sent over to Britain, marrying the princesses, the British princesses, and then they could go back and they could have a claim to being Caesar. In fact, this is what happened with Queen Helena later on in the 3rd, 4th century sort of time. Constantius, who was sent over to Britain, Constantius Chlorus, married Helena, who was the daughter of King Cole, and their son was Constantine. And when Constantius was killed in battle, Constantine was crowned king in Britain, and he then went and stormed Rome and became made emperor, and he became Constantine the Great, who then instituted Christianity in the Roman Empire. Now, the reason why he instituted Christianity in the Roman Empire wasn't because he had a vision and saw a cross, but because he was British. So his mother was Christian, because the church first took off in Rome, in the British church, the British church in Rome, and then the first country to actually pronounce themselves Christian was Britain. And this was King Lucius in around about 170 AD. And we have lots of records of that around about that time. From that time onwards, there are records of King Lucius pronouncing the country Christian. And you also had Druids here at the same time. And there was no battles between the Druids and the Christians. They got on absolutely fine. And again, we have records that a certain number of Archflamens, which was the highest rank in Druidry, they transferred to become archbishops. And a certain number of Druids became bishops. And there's a lot of similarity between what we know of the Druid religion and what we know of the Old Testament religion. The Druids would offer sacrifices. They would offer sacrifices for sin. They would wear the same clothing. They had to prove their genealogy. They had to be able to show their family tree going back 10 generations to prove that they were of the correct family to be a Druid. And that's exactly the same as in the Old Testament. You have a family line of priests, which are called the Levites, and you can only be a priest if you're descended from this particular tribe, and you have to show your genealogy. And we had exactly the same law in Britain with our Druids here. And of course, you've also got the link with the stone circles and the standing stones and the dolmens that we have, these megaliths that I mentioned last week that you find all around the world. Wherever white people have gone in the world, we erected these standing stones. And the only place that they're actually written about is in the Old Testament. There's over a dozen verses in the Old Testament referring to stone circles being erected, dolmens being put up, standing stones being put up. And the standing stones would be whitewashed with lime, and then the words of the law would be put into them. And no metal tools would be used on these stones either. And the majority of the stones that we have in Britain have no metal tools used on them whatsoever. So there's a link between the Old Testament and these megaliths that we find, and Britain is covered in these megaliths. There's obviously a link there in the practices between Druidry and the practices of the Old Testament. And again, this is because white people, we're all related. We all started off in the same place. And one group of us became the priestly nation. That was the Hebrews and the Israelites. And the rest of us, we weren't given these laws and these rituals and all these things to perform. It was only one particular group of us that were. So, but we still had the same customs, the same civilization. So we would build these stones, put these stones up, these megaliths up, exactly the same as the Israelites of the Old Testament would. Right, we're coming up to the end of the first half of the podcast today, so I think it's time for a break and a little bit of music. Got something a little bit special for us. This is a bit of an old classic. Probably most of you have heard it. Maybe some of you haven't. It's still a very good example of electronic dance music, basically. It's by Cyber Nazi, and it's called Aryan Future. We'll be right back. great track that is. That reminds me of Dancing in a Field as the Sun Comes Up in the early 90s. It also reminds me a little bit of Yellow, some of those samples that he was using there. I still think that's the best track that CyberNazi has ever done. And all his stuff is good. I do recommend that you check that out if you haven't before. And again, it's another example of what talent we have among us white nationalists. You know, we are really talented people, creative people. And if you contrast what I just played for you with what I played last week, I mean, it's a totally different style of music, but the expertise and the sense of melody is up to such a high standard that that's what sets it apart from the rest. Anyway, let's get back to what I'm talking about today, Christianity and why it's white, and particularly the link that it has with Britain. Because one of these, this comment that I was looking at was saying about how Christianity, it was forced on the Negroes, and before that it was forced onto white people. And I think what I've shown here is that it wasn't forced onto the British people. Joseph Arimathea came over. He was just given land, 12 hides of land. He was given the same rights as the Druids had, so he didn't have to work. And at the same time, you had Caractacus, or around about the same time, you had Caractacus in Rome. And here's Palatium Britannicum, which was afterwards called the Hospitium Apostolorum, the Hospital of the Apostles. And then finally it was called St. Pudentiana, which is the name that the building is still under now. And Hermas Pastor is also associated with that, and with St. Paul. So you had the first church in Rome was British, and you also had the church being started off in Britain by Joseph of Arimathea. And the early church had lots of famous saints, famous Celtic saints, and then we come down to Constantine the Great, who goes to Rome and basically becomes emperor, and he institutes Christianity over the Roman Empire. And once he institutes Christianity over the Roman Empire, this is the first instance that we have of laws being put into place to protect Gentiles from Jews. And basically, Jews are forbidden from owning Christian slaves. They're forbidden from marrying Christians. They're forbidden from banking. They're forbidden from holding any office, political office or civil office. And basically, they are prevented from being able to take advantage of Christians. And Christians by that time, it always meant just white people. But by that time, the only people that were in the empire that were not Christian were Jews, basically. Before that point, you had Julius the Apostate, and he loved the Jews. He really did. And he paid the Jews to try and rebuild their temple, because he thought, if I can rebuild the temple, then the Christians will stop believing in Christ. And all these fireballs arrived or shot out from the temple and killed lots of Jews, and he had to stop doing that. Anyway, Constantine took over and turned the empire Christian, basically legalized it, and brought out all these laws to prevent the Jews from Jewing, basically. So then the Jews moved from the Roman Empire to the Caesarian Empire, and they basically convert the aristocracy in Caesarea to Judaism, and the Khazars become Jews, and then they work their way into Europe, into Russia, Poland, and back this way over to Britain. That's another story. And again, you can check out Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson's work on these Khazars, and don't believe that there is no record of this. There is record of this. This is all in the church records, that the Khazars were the Jews, basically. It's all in the Russian church records and the Eastern Orthodox church records. And if you want to learn more about the British church, there's a fantastic book, which is called St. Paul in Britain, which is by the Reverend R. W. Morgan. And that was written about 140 years ago. It still hasn't been bettered, in my opinion. It's a fantastic book. St. Paul in Britain by R. W. Morgan. I'll tell you all about the early church. So then you had the Romans basically took over in Britain, and you had just before Constantine, you had persecution of the Christians by the Romans. But there was never any fighting between Druids and Christians. It was just Romans against Christians. And then Rome became Christian, and Britain had a bit of a respite then. There was no more persecution of the Christians until the Anglo-Saxons came over. And the Saxons came over at the invite of Vortigern to ostensibly to fight against the Picts. And it's probably Vortigern that instigated the Picts to come in and fight against him. But he gave the Saxons Kent because he fancied the daughter of Hengist or Horsa, one of those two. And he said, Hengist and Horsa said, we'll give you a hand in marriage if you'll give us the county of Kent. So he gave them the county of Kent, and the prince whose princedom was Kent was not very happy about that, and him and some others basically rebelled against Vortigern. But the Saxons at the time were pagans, and they behaved very badly. The Christian Britons tried to have a talk terms of peace with them, and the Saxons went to the peace talks with hidden knives, and they killed all the aristocracy, all the British aristocracy, basically. And then by this time, you had the British Church, where it had been apart from Rome, and Rome had become the religion of the empire. There'd been a few slight differences between the two, like following the date of Easter, nothing too serious. But Rome sent over a delegate that was Augustine, and Augustine came to Britain, and he saw that there was a church here already, and he had a meeting with the British church, and he wanted the British people to help him to convert the Saxons. But the British people were saying, well, these Saxons have invaded us, and they've kicked us out of England, and you want us to convert them? We'll pay them respects if they are Christian, the same as we'll pay respects to any Christian. The same as we'll pay respects to you, but don't expect us to convert them, and don't expect us to pay any particular special reverence to your Pope either. As far as we know, one Christian is the same as any other Christian. And Augustine wasn't very happy about this, and he used the Saxons to then go against the British Christians, and they burned down a university. They burned down Bangor University, and they slaughtered loads of priests, barefoot priests that were leaving the place, and the Saxons slaughtered them. Eventually, the Saxons became Christian, and the fighting stopped. Because this was the thing. Once white people became Christian, they stopped fighting their neighbours. King Arthur, another famous Christian king, he had to come back from Europe, from his campaign in Europe, because Scotland was invading and taking advantage of his absence. And he had the Scots at his mercy. And they said, well, don't kill us. We're Christian, the same as you. We're Christian brothers. And that stayed Arthur's hand, basically. And he didn't kill them. And that's basically a microcosm of what happened once Europe became Christian. We were then united as Christians. Up until that point, we weren't united. There was none of, like there is today, of, well, we're all white nationalists. There was none of that. It was, you know, well, you're a German barbarian. Well, you're a Gaul barbarian, you're a British barbarian, and we would fight among one another and try and take one another's lands. Case in point, Rome invading Britain. Well, once we became Christian, that gave us, although it didn't always stop us fighting, it did give us a point of similarity, a point of reference. So before we were called white, we were called Christendom. And I just to take us away from the history a little bit here, and even if you... You don't subscribe to what I was saying earlier about the Middle East and the Near East originally being white and Christianity being a white man's religion. If it's been in the white man's hands for 2,000 years, which it has, it can only reflect what is within the white man himself. It's like curry. We've had curry for the last 100 years, and our curries in Britain are now completely different to the curries in India. They reflect British tastes, and they say that there's nothing as British as a British curry. And yet we've only had curries for 100-odd years. Yet Christianity has been in our hands for 2,000 years. So even if you don't believe what I was talking about in the first half of the podcast, You have to realize that Christianity reflects what it means to be white. It's noble. It's honorable. It's justice. It's the pursuit of truth, the pursuit of purity. It may have become corrupted today by the establishment church, but if you look at the pages of the Bible itself, you can see that it's pure. It reflects white people's thinking. No usury, no adultery, a respect for justice, a respect for honor. No greater love does a man have than he lay down his life for his friends. I mean, that's lay down your life for your nation and look after the people of your nation. Love your neighbor as yourself. It means love your fellow white man as you love yourself. Love your nation. It's all about nationalism. God created the nations. It tells us in the Bible, God created the nations. In the afterlife, we will be in our nations with our kings in our nations. If you don't have an ethnic nation, then there's no place for you in the afterlife, according to the pages of the Bible. Anyway, back to the history lesson. So the Anglo-Saxons ravaged the country, and then eventually they too became Christian. And that was when the Anglo-Saxons achieved the most amazing things. This is when you have Alfred the Great. Alfred the Great goes back to the British common law. British common law was based on the laws of the Old Testament. We know this because that's what Alfred tells us himself. And he also went back to the Molmutine laws. King Molmutius in the 6th century BC was the first Briton to write a law code. If you want to learn more about the early kings of Britain, I recommend my Arian narration series on the history of the kings of Britain. That tells you all about them. Molmutine wrote these laws in the 6th century BC, and those laws were still in place when Alfred wrote his law code. The Druids had these laws, and they called them the Triads, because they were all in threes. They had a fantastic law that you couldn't take a man's tools of his trade away from him. You couldn't take his home from him, and you couldn't take his children from him, because to do those things would be to unman a man. The water was free. The wood was free. Timber was free for lighting a fire. And if you could get a house built from dawn till dusk, then that house and the land that it was on was your own. Nobody could commit a crime on the highways. If you committed a crime on the highways, it was the same as attacking the king himself. And we had roads. We had roads going from the length and breadth of the country. Proper roads. And we know that they were proper roads because the Romans write about us being in chariots when they came over here. And you can't ride chariots in the mud. You've got to have proper hard-packed surface. And riding chariots had gone out of favor in Europe. But the reason why we were still doing it is because we've been doing it since the days of Troy, when Brutus came over from Troy. And of course, again, we read in the Old Testament about the chariots. It's a Middle Eastern, Near Eastern thing. So again, this is this link going back into history to that time. Alfred the Great, he was the first to say, well, we need to have schools for everyone, not just the nobles. Anyone that's bright, if it's a son of a peasant, but he shows that he has the aptitude, then he needs to be taught alongside the sons of the nobles. And he was. And Alfred the Great himself taught a lot of these children. He hanged over 100 judges for being corrupt in the course of law. He also built the first navy, and he was the first to build these defensive areas that were called boroughs, which is where we get the term boroughs from. Basically fighting against the Vikings. Again, another pagan group that hadn't become Christianized yet, that were raping and pillaging and ravaging the country, basically, and destroying all the learning. They burned down all the libraries, all the monasteries that they could get their hands on. They just destroyed these things, basically, until they became Christian. Once they became Christian, they stopped warring against their neighbors. And we had the Dane law, and we had Danish kings. I mean, and we referred to these Vikings as Danes. We didn't refer to them as Swiss or Norwegians. We referred to them as Danes. I think Denmark must have been much more powerful at the time. And it's quite interesting that when you look at words in Danish and in English, they're very similar. It's quite easy to understand what the Danes are talking about when you look at Danish language. It's very similar to English. But that's because we were the same people. If you look back in the Chronicle of England, it talks about the the Cymry coming over here, the original British coming over here, as they're trekking on their way over, and some of them went to Denmark, basically. That was the origins of the Danes, is the same origins of the British people. And when the Scythians came over much, much later, at a much later time, the Scythians were originally a branch of the same people but they just left earlier. The Cymry, who became the Danes and the British, the ones that stayed out there in the Middle East and the Near East, then made their way over 500 to 600,000 years later, and they were known as Scythians by that time. So the Anglo-Saxons were the same people as the Danes and the British, but over time, their language had changed and their customs had changed, but essentially, they're the same people. And obviously, you would get a slight difference just through genetic selection, basically. Say blonde people are more attractive. Blondes are more likely to pair up and breed, and obviously the taller, fitter, healthy ones. So in that area of Scandinavia, you're going to get more blonde people. But essentially, they're exactly the same as the race, the white race, but with darker hair, or the Scots with their red hair, say. Essentially, we're all part of the white race, but where we are on our own in an area for a certain amount of time, certain parts of our physique may change slightly, but not much. We're still essentially white. So then the Vikings became Christianized. They stopped ravaging Britain. And once we'd all become Christian, all of Europe had become Christian, that was when we went out to colonize the rest of the world. That was when we had built the cathedrals and these great centers of learning. It's quite funny that people would try and say today that Christianity is unscientific. We wouldn't have any science at all if it wasn't for the church and the Christians. And it was Alfred the Great that set up these schools, and before then it was the monasteries. And the only places of learning were the monasteries. I mean, we wouldn't know what we do know about history and about our old pagan beliefs if these monks hadn't written them all down and tried to save them. And it wasn't because they were, you know, this is horrible, we're going to write about this because it's terrible. That they were writing about it as that they were writing about history so that we didn't forget these things. Because Christianity wasn't, we didn't suddenly become a different people. We're still exactly the same people. It was just that we realized that there was a better way of doing things, an improved faith, an improved religion. What originally had been just for this priestly people, the people set apart by God to be his priests, was now available to all of us. And it says in the book of Jeremiah that the Lord will write his law within our hearts. No longer will we have to follow all these laws by these priests, but the law will be written in our hearts, which it is. I mean, we have a conscience. We know what's right and what's wrong. Sometimes I wonder if we always have had that conscience, and whether this reference in Jeremiah about after Christ the law would be written in our hearts was basically after that time we had a conscience. Because you think of some of the barbaric things that went on before them, human sacrifice. I mean, the Greeks were involved in human sacrifice, as well as just about every culture you read about. But it all stopped around about that time. So maybe that's what it was referring to, is that we had a conscience. Anyway, once we had become Christian, we had learning, we had schools, we had welfare. The aristocracy had their noblesse oblige. They were obliged to look out for the poorer members of society. And the church was responsible for a lot of good things. I mean, some people were not the Roman Catholic Church, but the Roman Catholic Church, I mean, they had a really good system. I mean, you would go and confess your sins, basically. You would confess your sins, and you would be told that was wrong, and you had to do penance for them, and people would punish themselves, voluntarily punish themselves for them. And Michael Jones makes a point of saying what we have today is this Jewish psychotherapist, and you confess your sins to him, and he says, oh, that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine. Don't feel guilty about it. Go out and do some more of it. So everything has become completely Judaized, basically. And our churches have become infiltrated, and our churches have become Judaized. When you think about how Judaism was formed in the first place in opposition to Christianity, because don't forget, Judaism was a new thing based around the Talmud, based around the rabbis from the 4th century onwards. What you've got in the Old Testament is the Old Testament Hebrew religion based around the temple, the sacrifice, and the priests. And Judaism is based around following what the Talmud tells them. And the Talmud is all about how to break all the laws in the Old Testament, how to get around them, and how much you need to hate the Christians. That's all Judaism basically is. And all the while we followed Christianity, we were safe from the Jews. We had a law, sicut Judaeus non, the Jew. We're not supposed to burn down the Jew just for being a Jew. But at the same time, the Jew is not allowed to teach in the schools. He's not allowed to run the banks. He's not allowed to marry Christians. He's not allowed to have Christians working for him. And this goes back to Constantine's laws that he brought in once he made Christianity the official church of the Roman Empire. But then once the Jews had infiltrated the church and corrupted it, I mean, they've basically done all they can to distract and deflect from the fact that they're not the people of the Old Testament. And by this time, we've discovered India, Africa, and the church tries to convert these Negroes, basically, who don't really understand Christianity. And when they're left on their own, they don't go along with it. So this, they give up on it, basically, and it becomes voodoo. So this comment that we're saying that Christianity was forced upon us, and now it's being forced upon the Negroes, it certainly wasn't forced upon us. And it's not really being forced on the Negroes either. They see it as, well, this is going to, the white man's going to think better of us if we follow this. We'll get more gibs me dats if we say we're Christian. So I don't think it's really being forced on the Negroes either. It's a benefit for them to take it up. And the same as it's a benefit for somebody to look left and look right before they cross the road so they don't get run over. I mean, Christianity is common sense. It's the white man's, it's the reflection of the white man's understanding of the way that the universe is. So of course it's going to be a great improvement for Negroes to follow it. It's not really being forced upon them. Just before we finish, I say that there have been instances where Christianity was forced on white people, but very, very few and far between. We have a tiny incident of a forest being burned down by Charlemagne, and that was more to do with a group of people not accepting that he was the guy in charge. He wanted to build this empire, and a certain group of Saxons refused. And it was a Christian empire. I mean, whatever the religion the king accepts is the religion that the people have to accept. And Charlemagne was a Christian. He wanted to unite his empire, and he had this group that were rebelling, basically. So he burnt down the grove. Wasn't that many people. It's a tiny part of Germany, absolutely tiny. So you have that one instance, and then later on in the 12th or 13th century, you have the Teutonic Knights, and they went on a crusade in the Baltic states. Again, really not that many people. And it was basically because they wanted to civilize that area. They wanted to bring that area into line with the rest of Europe. So you had Christendom, and it was wrong to force it on people. I mean, the whole idea of Christianity is you accept it for yourself. It's not like Islam, which is forced on people. You either become say you are a Muslim and obey our laws, or we're going to turn you into a slave and tax you and rape your women. That's Islam. But Christianity, it always says you have to ask for forgiveness of sins. You have to realize that this is the truth. I mean, otherwise it wouldn't be the truth. Islam is not the truth. The truth has to be discovered for ourselves so we understand the importance of following it. So Christianity, I hope I've shown with this podcast that Christianity was white. It was originally white. It was brought about by white people, and it's just being corrupted now. It's being corrupted today. And if we're going to have an ethno-state, we need to have a religion that unites us. I mean, it wasn't until we had Christianity that we did anything as Europe, that we went out and colonized the world, that we had the scientific explosion. It was all once we have become Christian and united as Christians, we then had common laws, a common morality, and we're going to need that as an ethno-state. I mean, Hitler knew this. Hitler knew that Christianity was very, very important, that the people kept to their Christian faith, and the church should not get involved in the affairs of politics, but at the same time, the politicians should be obeying the Christian law. And we used to have a requirement for any British politician to make an oath that they were going to follow Christian law. But once the Jews were allowed in, they changed that law. See, all the harm that's really come to the church has been since the Jew was emancipated. The Jew was given citizenship and he was given equal rights with white people, basically after Napoleon. And Christian identity people believe that that is referred to in Revelations, where it says that Satan is let out of his pit. He's been locked up in the pit for 1,000 years and he's let out to cause havoc on the world. And that's the Jews gaining their emancipation. And once they were made equal rights with citizens to us, then that sicut Judaeus non, that law that Constantine the Great brought in, or all these laws he brought in, that Jews could not be treated the same as Christians. They had to be treated differently. They could not be allowed to have the same rights as Christians, or they would abuse them. Once the Jews were made equal citizens, they were allowed to abuse all those rights, which is what they've done, which is why they've taken over our governments, taken over our countries, and why we're being encouraged to just sit back and accept white genocide. But again, all of that is predicted in the Bible, and we're coming to the end of the podcast here, so I don't think I've really got time to go into that, but everything that is going on today, it is predicted in the Bible, and I do firmly believe that Christianity is the white man's religion. The other religions have all become corrupted. You can say the Vedas, the early Aryan Hindus, that was a white religion, but it's been in the brown man's hands for the last 1,000 years. Don't forget what I was saying about how curry in the white man's hands has changed completely in 100 years. And even if Christianity didn't start out white, it will be white after 2,000 years. What do you think has happened to the scriptures that have been in the hands of brown people for 1,000 years? You can say the same about Buddhism. The only faith that is left that is pure is Christianity. And that's because we know that we still have those original scriptures. They were written by white people and they reflect the spiritual yearning in the white man's racial soul. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, we do require your donations, and Morgoth from Morgoth's Review, he also requires donations. I'll be back next week, next Monday. Maybe I'll have Brutus back, maybe I won't. But until then, I hope you all have a wonderful week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.